right. Good morning. You are listening to TV on the Radio. I'm Leah, and I'm here with Jessica. And we have a very special guest today. the Hollywood Reporter's own Tim Goodman, on your Twitter as Bastard Machine, is joining us to talk all things TV criticism. So, Tim, thanks for being here.
I'm excited to be here. How are you guys?
We're great.
We're great.
We're so happy you're here.
I have a mimosa. Or now I've already finished one mimosa, and now I have... straight champagne. Jess is trying to get me drunk.
Yeah, you should have pre-gamed him. You should have pre-gamed.
I should have, yeah.
Go hard. All right, so I'm having some mic difficulties. Don't mind me.
But Sunday.
Jess.
Yeah, what's up?
Do you want to jump in here? We have some questions.
Okay.
For you, good. Tim.
Right, our questionnaire.
Yeah.
Is the first one, why are we having a podcast at 10 o'clock on a Sunday morning? Is that the first question?
That's
what
I thought. So it could be any time, really.
Yeah. This is live over your internet airwaves.
I know. I love it. I love it.
Yeah. This is the only slot they gave us. So we're happy to be here on the wonderful BFF.fm.
Yeah, it could have been Sunday at 8 a.m.
I know, right?
Yeah,
then
exactly.
I would have Skyped in. Or just stayed up.
Next time.
Just stayed up.
All right, so first question. Let's do this some James Lipton style here, get a little inside the TV critic studio.
Sure.
How did you end up a TV critic?
Laziness.
Okay. Great.
Seriously.
You know, we've tried that.
Check, check. Yeah. We're like, how do we break into this?
Well, you're well on your way. I'm telling you. That's definitely a thing.
Okay. Do you need assistance?
Yeah. We'll bring booze.
We'll bring booze.
I totally need assistance. Yeah. Right. My life needs assistance. So it's like, oh my God. I just can't run it. I'm just failing.
I said last week, I'm looking for a project. I'm in.
Yeah.
I'm in.
So I was actually a music critic.
Okay.
And I think the second paper that I was at where I was a music critic slash features writer, covered everything from comedy on down. Been there for, I don't know how long I was there, 2 or 3 years. And they said, hey, they got bought by another company, Knight Ritter. And they said, this is out way out in Walnut Creek. And they said, your paper's too big, 200,000 at the time, to not have a TV critic. Would you do that? And so they came to me as the music critic and said, hey, you would be perfect for this. And I didn't watch hardly any TV growing up at
you
all.
Like music? Really? That's just like TV.
I have no institutional knowledge at all about television.
Really?
Zero.
Wow.
Like Full House to the whole Fuller House thing. Yeah. Never saw it.
Okay.
Not one frame of it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, can I still be the music critic? And they're like, no. And I was living in San Francisco, and I was out in Walnut Creek, and then I said, this is where the lazy part kicks in. I'm like, TV critic, can I work from home 3 days a week? And they're like, sure. So, because I didn't want to make the commute from San Francisco to Walnut Creek.
Yeah, why would you ever want
to? Why would you want
to
do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, why would you want to go out there anyway, I guess?
Yeah. Yep.
Sorry, Walnut Creek.
Throwing down the controversial.
No, I co-signed that. I've been to Walnut Creek.
I lived in Walnut Creek for a while.
In the 925, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh. I was right off Treat.
Oh, yeah, right off Treat Boulevard.
Sherry Lane.
Oh, dude, it's super. So that's what I did. I was living in San Francisco, and I just didn't want to go out there 3 times a week. Coming back is the hard part. Of course, you're coming back into San Francisco, and it's 2 hours of commute. But anyway, and then I found I loved it. I loved it.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Worked it as a real beat and never looked back.
Yeah, TV's amazing.
It's amazing.
Why wouldn't you?
Yeah,
and
it's
Tim,
amazing.
We say this every week, but we are living in a golden age of TV at the moment.
Is it a nightmare for you? Like, how do you even decide where to start these days?
It's a platinum age now.
You're right here first, guys.
We're going to move you up to the next age. We're in a platinum age. Yeah, it's impossible.
Yeah.
It really is. It's... But, you know, since forever, we've been using freelancers to do unscripted because there's literally thousands of unscripted shows.
Yeah.
So I only do scripted, so drama and comedy and miniseries, all that stuff. But recently, about 6 months ago, we hired another TV critic at THR, Dan Feinberg, who's great. And even between the two of us, we're still overwhelmed with shows to watch. And, you know, like I always tell my bosses, it's not like going to a movie and you spend 2 hours and you're done.
Yeah.
It's like you have to watch, I try to watch between 3 and 5 episodes if they're available. Mm-hmm. And then if you like the show, it's ongoing, as you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so it's 13 or 22 or 10 hours. And then you magnify that by, you know, 50 shows. On my top list of best shows of 2015 was 46.
I read that.
And it was, and all of those are great shows.
And there were some I had not even heard of.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it is. So it is overwhelming. And the, And the funny thing too, this is, I always make sure my bosses know this, or my boss, I only have one. I was like, you know, even though we have another person helping out, it's like those shows don't go away. Unless it's a really terrible network show that I'll never have to watch again. I still have to watch. Like, he reviewed People versus O.J. Simpson. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be huge, right? That's the thing that's going to be big. And I have to watch all that. I haven't watched it yet. So, of course, I'll watch that. And any good series that I watch, he's going to watch.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really save much time except for the...
So what I'm hearing is you'd like us to come on board. So
yeah, I think
available.
You guys should come on board. Yeah.
We are available.
Did the
we
lazy thing not work for you guys?
we're still trying.
we spend a lot of our time watching a lot of TV, some of it quite bad. Mm-hmm. Do you get to choose what you review? Yes. Or is it, oh, nice.
Yeah. And then now that there's Dan, it's more of a... I mean, my title is Chief TV Critic, so clearly I'm the chief.
Yeah. Right. Sorry, Dan. So, Real Housewives for you.
No, but and I don't really care. You know, I mean, every now and then there'll be five really good shows, and we'll say, okay, of these five, which ones do you want? And then, you know, very rarely do we have one where we both really want to do it. You know, I think the only thing I can remember is I definitely wanted to do second season of Fargo. And he really wanted to do that too, so he snatched away leftovers from me, and so we bitterly scoffed and walked in the opposite direction. No, so we ended up both, of course, watching the rest of all of those. Right? You have to watch, and both are fantastic shows. So.
Yeah. Did you watch season two of The Leftovers?
Oh yeah,
so good.
Loved it. I'm a fan of season one too.
I also liked season one, but I thought season two did. They moved the whole show and still kept it super interesting.
It's amazing.
And Justin Theroux and his Labrador eyes are just dream.
Yeah, that and other things I'm told from my lady friends.
Oh.
Yeah. You did not know
his
that?
Tattoos?
Wait, what are you revealing here?
Oh, didn't
on
you
air?
Know? Like, if you watch season one, there's a scene where he's out jogging. Did you hear this?
He
was wearing a pair of sweatpants. And let's just say that that's all he was wearing.
I like Leah pretending that she doesn't remember. Yeah, like scene.
I have a gif of that on my phone right now. Yeah. Actually,
and then they they say, okay, you can't run without underwear on anymore. That's so season two. He after that, like, he was running. Every time he's running, he's like running in shorts now. But like,
I love
whatever.
That this is a triumphant redemption story for Jen Aniston. Brad, who like good for you.
Yeah,
get some girl, get some.
He's a good looking dude.
Okay, and then a very important question that's relevant to our interests. How do we get screeners?
Yeah,
how does that happen? How does stuff get released to you?
Well, it used to be discs, and I'm just tragic and sad to say that it used to be DVDs. Yeah. I mean, it used to
and
be
VHS.
Yeah,
before
it used
that.
To be like a VHS. I think when I first started, they were like big clunky HBO VHS tips.
Did you ever get a Laserdisc screener?
No. Wow, Jess, that's my feelings are hurt. No, but now
those
it's all
too expensive to send.
Yeah,
and it moved from discs. We're in like transition period now. I actually like the discs. I like to have it physically, have it, and no, I haven't lost it. But now there's most stuff is on links, so we're watching it, you know, on your computer.
Yeah, so you could just forward us those emails, is what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying. Yes, Jessica, I'm just like, there you go. Look, I'm between Jess and Jessica. I'll figure it out.
It's okay.
Which one?
It doesn't
one.
Matter.
And yeah. Leah, is there like a? Can I just shorten it to like L? Hey, L.
Sure.
Good.
Sure.
What's up, L? Let's do
what? Who has time to say a
what else? TG. What else? TG. Sure.
I noticed Leah and I were texting about planning for this show, and my phone autocorrects your name to all caps, and I don't remember why.
But it's funny because it's Tim Goodman.
Yeah.
And that's how I hear it in my head now.
Really? I was like, it pops out. Like, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Tim Goodman. have you ever watched a show you thought you were going to review and then just like bagged it, decided it wasn't worth it?
Ooh, that's like, can look at you guys with the prep questions. Good stuff.
I have just sent me a list and then I wrote mine in. I'm going old school.
I like that. I do that too.
I was
too.
Trying to get a cohesive flow going, and I'm already working from the second page.
You don't know,
so I'm not
all.
Doing a cohesive flow.
I think I've had a show where I've watched it and then bailed on it just because it was so bad. I've usually written that review and said it was so bad.
Okay.
But there's definitely ones where I laugh with we've sent you three shows. I'm like, I couldn't get through the first 15 minutes of the first one. So thank you for humoring me with the additional two. So those are, I mean, I've certainly had struggled to get through. I've actually given up before. Mm-hmm. So if that's the what you're talking about, Leah, I've definitely given up, like, why I watch it. And then just say, look, that's the review, right? You're like, look, I couldn't get through this.
Couldn't make it.
Yeah, and like, and now we're in the platinum age.
Yes.
I think that time is the biggest resource for people. Right. So in a lot of ways, being a TV critic or whatever is now like, it's like part of its public service announcement, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's like a PSA.
Yeah.
Don't bother.
Because people say, like, in general, I mean, you guys are TV savvy, but a lot of people who are just, I mean, you're doing it, you're watching it, you're talking about it and all that stuff. So. But people who are just sort of like, I'm just going about my life. I'm just doing this, you know, I only have time for 6 shows. Mm-hmm. What do I watch? Yeah. And then they want to know. And like when I posted my list of 46, people were like, oh, my God. First of all, I could not watch 46 shows. Sure. Not helpful. But most of the people were like, OK, I'll take this list. I'll get to it.
Yeah.
And so it's really time is what people are looking for. They really just say, tell me what to watch. I'm overwhelmed with all these reviews. And everybody's saying, this is so great. And this is on Netflix. And this is 5 years old. How come you haven't watched that?
I was going to ask you that. So now with the streaming subscriptions and everything being available to binge watch, how do you think that and there's really quality content on
Hulu everywhere.
And Amazon and Netflix have all done really, really amazing worthwhile shows over the last few years. How do you think you just came from the TCA, the Television Critics Association, shindig down in
shindig,
party, come on.
Death March with cocktails.
Yeah, Death March with cocktails, yes. I have been reading you since you were at the Chronicle, and I have referred to it as the Death March with cocktails ever since.
Excellent. I do too. So that, and it's now embedded in the tour, yes.
But so for anyone who's not super up on what the TCA does, you guys twice a year go to Hollywood,
right?
And all the shows come to you, and they like preview what's coming out for the new season.
Yes.
So, have you gotten any kind of sense of feedback from like old school networks? Are they changing their model based on the fact that you can now? I feel like Jess and I have talked about this before. Anyone under 30 doesn't even have cable. They just use subscription services to watch TV, and people want to binge it. They don't want to wait. And so how does that work out for like an ABC or a Fox?
It doesn't work out well for them. It's not their model. And they separately, not to get too wonky, but they separately need to change their model.
Yeah.
Because they can't compete.
Yeah.
I mean, and because it used to be that they were big tent, right? Mm-hmm. And they still are in some ways, like NCIS. I know that's your two favorite shows.
Jack.
Both of you love that show. Check. But other than that, and like Empire, which is a huge hit, those are big tent shows, right? Where you're getting, you know, 22 million people to watch it. And the only thing close to that on cable historically is now it's The Walking Dead. But it used to be like every show on network was big like that. Mm-hmm. But now, other than those outliers, every show on the network is a cable show ratings-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Except the model is 3 times as expensive to produce.
Yeah.
They're mired in this old school way of doing it. They're not like light on their feet and fast like Netflix is or like FX, and they have to program so many 22 hours a week, which Netflix doesn't have to do. They do a lot of programming, obviously, but like if you get something like FX or AMC, they don't have 22 hours of programming. They've got like 5 shows, you know.
Yeah.
So or you know, when you get to FX, you've got 15 or something like that, and that's shows that they've cultivated for a long time. So they're smaller, and that's how you survive. This whole we have something for everybody, and we have 22 episodes of each one. It's so outdated. But
yeah, must-watch TV is no longer.
Yeah, and I think that most people who are like TV fans of quality are getting their stuff on either cable or streaming services. And and you talked about like being under 30, which I'm just a little bit over 30.
Mm-hmm.
So, right, I mean, sure, you can tell. If I was that age, I would not have a cable subscription. There's like no way. I probably wouldn't have a TV, right? I'd be watching it
on my
phone.
Yeah, you watch it on your computer, right?
Yeah, computer and phone, yeah.
Oh, goddamn millennials.
Yeah. Do you think that this model, like the way we binge TV, has changed the way people make TV?
Definitely, yeah. And it doesn't always work that way. Like, you know, we had this little debacle at the Golden Globes where Mozart
Lady
in the
Gaga
Jungle.
Won.
Well, yeah, that was outstanding. That was the
Slater.
Height of just like dumbassification of the whole country. Right. So it was like, okay.
Trump for president, you guys. Yeah. If Lady Gaga won that,
it can happen.
Over Judith Light.
Right. And so then it was like, okay, so when Mozart in the Jungle won, it's a fine show and it's a great show to binge watch. from Amazon. You can pour right through it. Mm-hmm. But there are some shows, they're not, even though they might be on a streaming service, they're not made to binge. Like the Amazon just came out with this series called Mad Dogs. It was a British remake, and the guy who made it is still there. One of the actors is still there. The rest of it's like American actors. And it's, if you binge it, you see the flaws of the show, which is, it's everything is, it's so much pandemonium. Mm-hmm. They want to create the sense of like, and then we turned right and we fell in a hole, and then we got out of the hole and we turned left and the car flipped over. Like, that's the whole series. At least these guys are in Belize. Awesome. They're in Belize and they run into all these troubles. Well, when you're watching it on a binge, you're like, okay, this is exhausting.
Right.
And this would never happen. Like, you cannot have this many pratfalls and pitfalls. Mm-hmm. But if you were to watch it week by week, I'm sure it would be more interesting, but not bingeable. So
that's kind of how I felt about Bloodline. Like, every episode of that show, I was exhausted after.
Yes.
And I think my problem was I expected it to be binge-worthy, but it really probably would have worked better week to week.
I think you're right. Yeah. It was really slow developing.
Yeah.
But it was also super tense.
Yeah.
I had a friend texting me in all caps for, like, she watched it after
I
did.
Was it my name popping up? No.
Texting me in all caps, just like, oh my God, I want to kill him. And then like, oh, he's so old.
And Ben Mendelsohn was great.
Yeah, oh, he was speaking amazing. Of, mm-hmm. God, speaking I have so many injustice. Questions for you, but who do you think is, like, underused on TV right now? And before we get to that, I have a very important question.
Okay.
You know, in music, some people are lyrics and some people are melody people. Mm-hmm. You can feel free to share your preference.
I'm a lyrics person.
Oh, really?
Yeah, absolutely.
Lyrics is where it's at.
Lyrics is where it's at. And they actually don't even have to be, they can be atonal for some parts. I mean, I'm not a big, like, some people are like, oh, that's a terrible voice. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? Like, I don't even care if they can basically sing. Tell me a story.
I wish we could periscope this right now. Periscope. Because Jess just gave you the, like, biggest side eyes with a huge shrug.
Well, we're sitting right next to each other. And I told her that I have a terrible, like, broken neck. I have to turn left to see her. You're on
it's
my side.
Not to.
Yeah. So.
But for TV, are you a, like, script or actor or director? What do you think makes it?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because TV is definitely a writer's medium, and film is a director's medium. And in as we move into the future, you're going to see more like Soderbergh. Well, there's almost every great director has done television, from Scorsese to Soderbergh and on down the line. And they all come to television to tell more adult, grown-up stories that they can tell over 8 hours or 10 hours or whatever instead of two. I find it funny that people are bitching about movies being, you know, 2 hours. I'm like, what? You can't even tell a story in 2 hours.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, so, and there's a theory that will become more director driven because all those people are coming, but it's still a words medium. I like the scripts. I like to, like, I want to be able to know that, like, Matt Weiner from Mad Men, I mean, there was eye candy, right? Everybody looks good. Mm-hmm. The costumes were great. It was mid-century modern, which is, like, total my wheelhouse.
Yeah.
So that was great, but the bottom line was it was the best written show on TV. You know, same with The Wire.
But don't you think Hamm had a part in that? I mean, he embodied Don Draper so well that without, like,
he did. But, you know, I think that a lot of it was the writing. They found a great actor who ended up being amazing. Mm-hmm. But those words that he says are so, yeah. And then he doesn't hurt that he's awesome looking and funny.
Really? I hadn't noticed.
Isn't that charming?
I hadn't noticed. I just appreciate his acting
skill. I love Don Draper.
Skill.
It took me years for people to say, wait, people don't like Don Draper? It's like, that's like my ideal life.
That was
drinking,
one of my questions.
Sex was awesome.
One of my questions.
Cars.
Which TV character would you like to be?
And Draper, for sure.
Everyone says that, right?
None
but conversely, who do you think you're most like? Who on TV?
You guys put some thought into these questions. So forget them. You can just keep asking questions. Forget my music. This is too good. Although I bet I have lousy questions. You know what's going to happen? We're going to leave and you're like, oh, we've prepped all these great questions and he was lousy.
No, not at all.
He didn't answer.
He's already our best show yet.
Yeah, you can come on every week until we get through all of our questions.
Oh, yeah.
You can Skype in.
I'll Skype in. That's awesome. I don't know who I'm most like. I don't know. Who's the fattest, ugliest person on there? That'd be me.
That is not.
And the oldest.
Hardly.
I think, you know what it is? Down. Okay, it's going to be, I'll be Louis Anderson on Baskets. That's me.
No. Ew. No. I thought you were going with Louis C.K. That's a fine pick.
He's
like
a
slightly
lovely
flawed
man.
But, you know. deep. And
slightly flawed,
whatever.
But deep. Yeah.
Sure, we'll go.
He's Louis. Divorced. I'm divorced. That's
there
all.
You go. Yeah. Louis C.K.
Louis C.K. I would love to be as funny as Louis C.K.
Who is underused on TV?
Oh, my God. Lots of people, right? I mean, yeah. There's so certainly so many great actresses, and they've finally come over and gotten great roles on. You know, that's funny because that's something. I was just watching Mad Dogs, which is not a really good series on Amazon. But Romany Malco is in it, and he was in Weeds. And I was thinking, this guy's fantastic. He's going to be great. And it was really nice to see him in something again. He did some movies, which was fine, but I want to see him on television more often. And I thought the same thing when Rami Malek came as Mr. Robot.
Oh,
it's like,
so good.
He was so great in The Pacific. And he's such a nice person. He actually remembered, The Pacific was a long time ago, and he actually remembered that I, in my review, which at the time I think was Chronicle, raved about his acting.
How old is he? I thought he was like 22 or something.
He just looks that young.
Yeah,
right?
Really?
Yeah. He remembers it. And then, cause I did a full column at THR about, that the show wouldn't work without him being the actor. Mm-hmm. I even said you couldn't put John Hamm in that role. It could not be the same way. You had to really be in his interior. You had to be in his brain, in his mind. And he sent me this really lovely note saying, like out of the blue, he's like, I totally remember and love that you liked my performance in Pacific and blah blah. I was like, wow, okay, so more of him.
Rami Malek, if you're listening, you're welcome on TV on the radio anytime, anytime.
Well, you know, actually, this is a good question. The like Rachel Bloom from
Crazy Ex-Girlfriend,
like that's a perfect example of people who I want to see more on television more. And Gina Rodriguez from
You're a big fanboy of Gina Rodriguez.
Yeah. It's hard. I didn't really hide that very well. But
I love you.
Heart eyes just came out. Hearts just came out of Tim's eyes right now, you guys. And also, if anyone would like to tweet a question, we have a lot. But if you want to tweet a question, we are at BFF TV on the radio. And Tim is at Bastard Machine on your Twitter. So feel free to tweet at either of us. My husband actually just texted. He has a very important question.
Excellent. Is it about the baby?
No.
Come back. The baby's crying.
That's a YP. He is in charge at the moment. That's his problem.
I've never heard that before.
It's YP? We have an MP or a YP. It's a my problem or your problem, and it's a YP
right
now.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
But he just texted because last night I watched the first episode of The Magicians, which you reviewed, which you reviewed favorably. Mm-hmm. I have read all the books, really liked the books, was into the show, and my husband and I got in an actual like raised voices argument about the demo for the show. So he just tweeted me and said, "Be sure to ask him what's the demo if it's a teen show."
Oh, it's definitely not a teen show.
Right? Thank you. I did not coach Tim Goodman on that.
No, okay, now your husband doesn't like me. I just blurted that out.
It is not a teen show.
It's not a teen show. The books, I think, were, and I didn't read the book. And in fact, Jason Snell, who I do my podcast with, he and I just talked about it because it's, you know, he's much more of a nerd. He's a tech guy and he's nerdy in sci-fi and that's kind of his, you know, wheelhouse. Mm-hmm. And he was like, "I'm really surprised you." He liked The Magicians too, and he's read the books. He was like, "Well, I thought for sure that's a show you wouldn't like." And I was like, you know, the reason I liked it, and I saw two episodes, and the second episode gets better because they don't have to have pilotitis.
Establishing.
Yeah, like, here's all these characters, and now we've got to get them to, you know,
here's
break Bill's university.
For you.
So they don't have to do that in the second episode. And that one improves. But that was like I think I was not expecting much from The Magicians. And it wasn't that it exceeded a low bar that I made for it. I think it was like, wow, this is pretty good. Writing is really solid. The acting's solid. The characters are really interesting. And, you know, not having read the book, I didn't know that they aged everybody up so that it was a graduate. That's a graduate school for magicians.
Yeah.
It sounds kind of dorky, right?
Super dorky.
Graduate school. Well, it's not just Hogwarts. Yeah. Oh, my God. They're stupid.
The thing I really liked about the books, this is totally getting off on a tangent, but these kids are at this like magical school, but magic is this terrible, horrible subject. Like the spells are really precise and everyone's struggling. Like
it's not easy.
It's not easy. Like it's not like a Hogwarts thing. Like, hey, we're so jazzed we can do magic. They're all like, fuck, I got another exam. Yeah. Like, I like that aspect of it. And I like that about the show.
I had a friend who saw the I guess it's an episode that's in three or four. It wasn't in one or two. But there's a, because they're all like 20 something, right? Mm-hmm. And he's like, he saw the picture of this girl floating, right? Yeah. Hot, of yeah, course. Yeah. And she's got the knee-high socks yeah. and the short skirt. He's like, well, yeah, I know why you like the show. Yeah. I'm like, I like that picture, but the show was knee-high socks.
I like it for the acting and the writing.
Right.
I read it for the article.
Do you have any weak spots? Like someone who, they're on the show, you'll maybe overlook some other flaws?
Yeah, I probably do. Like I know most of the people who are on... who are on Arrested Development. So
oh, really?
Some of the shows on those, I don't do, like I'll avoid reviewing it because I know them.
Yeah.
And I don't know a lot of people. I'm not trying to name drop. In fact, I don't.
Oh, no, who's
don't.
The most famous person in your phone? And can we get drinks with you and them?
Who's the most famous person in my phone? Jason Bateman, probably.
All right.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'll take it. Sure.
Yeah. So
That's solid.
Yeah. It's, and I don't like when I'm down there, it's funny. I don't, you know, I'm not starstruck really. Mm-hmm. It's really rare that like it's really rare to be starstruck, whether it's male or female. I was definitely starstruck when I saw, now I'm going to forget her name.
So
I wasn't that starstruck clearly. Yeah. So I don't really talk to actresses or actors that much. But sometimes just in the course of doing this for so many years, you do meet them and become friends. And, you know, I covered comedy in San Francisco for a lot of years, mm-hmm. back when like comedy was a thing, like it was a whole beat you could cover. So everybody who's kind of graduated and gone down and made shows, I remember like drinking with those guys until mm-hmm. and women until like 3 a.m. and hanging out and trying to document that lifestyle. And so sometimes when people get into shows, you're like, yeah, I have a soft spot for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
do you have anyone who you're in no matter what? Like, Vince Gilligan, I'll watch whatever he does. Kyle Chandler is the patron saint of TV on the radio.
Yeah, he is.
So I'll watch anything Kyle Chandler does. Those Northwestern Mutual ads that he does the voiceover on, I've replayed that a few times. And
he's actually I don't really know him, but I don't know if you guys saw the Hollywood.
Is he in your phone?
He's not in my phone, but he's in my friend's phone. So Lacey Rose from the Hollywood Reporter, mm-hmm. she did a huge story on him. Did you read that? Yeah. And it's just like,
nope.
How could you not like this guy? He's in Austin. Let's go drinking. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. This day drinking
and then
eating
he drove
tacos.
To the airport.
I know. He's such a gentleman. Everybody was swooning over that story. But yeah, there's a number of people like that in the in the business. You know, it's hard because when you really like somebody and you want them to succeed, it's like Will Arnett, right? You want Will Arnett to succeed, but he's been in some pretty bad stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, oh, why do you want a CBS show?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and it's because they all want to make millions of dollars and then they get locked into
that fight.
They
all want that syndication money.
Yeah. And then they get locked into the contract and they're like, yeah, this wasn't as fun as I thought. Mm-hmm. You know, and then they do something else. But yeah, like Amy Poehler and Tina Fey, like I'll watch anything that they do, right?
I wish they would do everything.
I wish they would do everything. And then every time Tina's on press tour and talking in front of us, you're like, okay, she's brilliant. It's so obvious that she's brilliant and funny. So whenever I see people like that, I want them to succeed. Same with Mitch Hurwitz, who did Arrested Development. Those are the people you just hope that they good things happen to them.
Awesome. Who was the most surprising? You can tell us your best and worst TCA story.
Uh-huh.
Sounds like food poisoning was up
there. Yeah, the last one, last presser, that's very unmemorable.
But who was the most surprising? Like who blew all your preconceived notions in person? Director, TV exec, whatever. I have developed a pretty deep love affair with Kevin Reilly based on your stories about him.
Kevin Reilly is
like
great.
A really good guy.
Yeah. Obviously John Landgraf is smartest guy in the room at FX. He's amazing. My very first press tour was when Les Moonves was still running CBS. And basically everything I learned about television I learned from Moonves, you know, because I was a music critic and I didn't know anything. And I was like, those were the days. I mean, you can still do it a little bit. And this is what I do because I cover executives and I actually cover the industry rather than write about just reviews.
Mm-hmm.
I always call it failure analysis. You know, it's like, why does something totally break down? Because no one has a recipe, right? If everybody knew how to make a hit, there'd be tons of hits.
Yeah.
And there's so many misses. And he was like, so you still do that these days, but back in the day, a little bit more probably. where we would go to these parties. Like, you work all day at TCA. We go in January for mid-season, but the big one is July, because that's going to – that's a July and runs into August. It's like 19 nights, 20 days. And really, at a hotel for that long, it's insane. Ugh. And then, like, and you work every day. There's no days off. And then, I mean, work, right? I mean, you're just basically talking to people.
But that is a little The Shining, like, for sure.
It's very much, and when you're in residence for that long, you get a little bit brain crazy. And then there's literally a party every night. So what happens is you wait till the parties and you get the executives drunk, and then you ask them all the questions that they wouldn't answer when they were in their session. And I did that with Moonves and pretty much everybody else.
Yeah.
And I learned a lot about TV because it's all secrets. It's all everything, you know, there's some pretty amazing stuff, but he was amazing. I'll tell you, Matt Weiner probably is the one that really blew me away the most, like, so detail oriented and knew what he wanted. Probably too detail oriented for some people, but he just had apps. It was his baby. It mm-hmm. was his dream project. He sat on it for so many years when he was doing The Sopranos, and he just, it's that vision to see it all the way through, every little detail, and have everything worked out and do all the research and be totally wonky mm-hmm. about it, and then not get bored with it.
Yeah.
Like, that dude could have done a number of a whole bunch more seasons, because that was that Mad Men and advertising and that era was totally in his blood.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah. We have talked about how we want to see Mad Men come back in the 80s. I want to see Don in a members only jacket for sure. I'd love to see what Matt Weiner could do with that.
I guarantee you that I have written, when they were still in the 60s, that like, I never wanted to see him in a bad suit. Yeah. And at the end, you were, right? When he got into the early phases, when he was out in California.
Don't you say anything about plaid Don Draper. But yeah, the denim tuxedo was no good.
Yeah, there was some. Did you like plaid Don Draper?
No.
Okay.
No. All right. Just a little bit, maybe.
I'm drinking champagne in this podcast. This is good.
Are there like markers you look for, like, for a good comedy or a good drama?
Yeah, I think the showrunner is key.
Oh,
yeah, the creator is key. And, you know, some people say, what do you do at these TCA events? Well, the main thing is you talk to the people who make the show.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. which is always a surprise for the stars, by the way.
Yeah.
Halle Berry. Halle Berry was the person I was talking about.
Oh,
when okay. I was starstruck when I saw her.
Oh, sure.
Because she's just as luminous as you can imagine.
I was
going to
say, she probably exudes just this.
And she was with a friend of mine who was interviewing her, I think, for TV Guide or something. And she's like, oh, have you met Tim Goodman? And she's like, guess my hand. She has my hand. I'm like, oh, my God. She's levitating. That was a while ago. But anyway, she's magnificent. So, you go to at these things, you talk to the showrunner. It's a very big surprise for the stars who don't get any questions. You're like, wait, I'm a huge star. And the first 10 questions went to this dude who wrote the show. But you find out whether they know what they're doing. And so we ask them a lot of questions. And especially if it's like a sci-fi or paranormal thing, you want to make sure that they have a rule book, a Bible that says, okay, well, in the pilot, this guy can swim underwater, like across the ocean. That's great. But I don't want to find out in the fifth episode that he can fly too, because then anything's possible. There are no rules. So, and I think for me, kind of famously for me, when I was just starting, I was at the Carnival from HBO. I was at that press event. And if you go back, Chronicle. If you go back and that, when I wrote from the press tour, I literally said in there, this show's dead. It has no ending. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't know what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
And this will be a gigantic waste of time for you. And it turned out, I mean, it's visually pleasing and intriguing, but it went nowhere and there was mm-hmm. no ending. And
okay.
I called
how does
that shit.
How does someone, I guess you just get what you can get, but when you have a show, like, that's what surprised me about the end of, Sons of Anarchy. It's like,
mm-hmm.
he's going to wrap this up in some crazy way, and I might not like it, but I know Kurt Sutter has a vision, and he did not have a vision for how that show ended. Except
I think that the danger of shows like that are they get too big,
mm-hmm.
and then they want to stay on the air too long. And then once you extend, I mean, the famous story is, you know, J.J. Abrams and those guys, you know, thinking that they knew the beginning and the end of Lost.
Mm-hmm.
But what they learned as, you know, and Damon Lindelof, what they learned as showrunners was it's the idea you drop a pebble in a, you know, you have this pond that's completely still, this body of water, and you've written out, you know, this is your metaphor, but you drop a pebble in it, you add a guest star, and you're like, oh, that guy's great. Let's build some more stuff from him. You know, or it becomes a hit, and the network says, we want more episodes. And then pretty soon all these ripples that you didn't expect, and mm-hmm. then you can't keep up with the story. So I think at the end of Sons of Anarchy, it had, I think, it for me, well before the end, it had kind of gone off the rails.
Yeah.
Which is, it just proves it's really hard to A, make a great television series, and then B, sustain it.
Right. Yeah.
That's the thing. Like, can you, that to me, that's the definition of when you get down to like the top five greatest shows of all time.
Let's do it.
You have to sustain your greatness.
Let's do it. What are your top five? What are your Desert Island five shows that
I think, well, I mean, obviously, like Wire, Hall of Fame, Breaking Bad. For me, Breaking Bad had five seasons. Because a lot of times for me, and this is weird, like if you're to judge the all-time greats, you got to do five seasons. That's why I don't put Deadwood in there, because it was three. Mm-hmm. It wasn't meant to end at that point. I don't think it was a very good ending. People who love it have kind of sort of glorified, like, oh, that's a perfect ending. Well, no, actually.
No, it's unfinished.
It's not. It's unfinished. Yeah. So, Breaking Bad is fantastic. The Wire, also five seasons. But I think if you're going to talk about this sustained greatness, for me, if I was going to argue it and say what's the number one show of all time, I would say Mad Men, because it went seven seasons.
Yeah,
and that, you know, there's some weakness in the sixth. Mm-hmm. And I think if you look at it overall, there were certainly episodes, not full seasons, because if you have a full season where you go off the rail, I don't think you qualify. I think you're just dead at that point, creatively. And you can make a comeback maybe, but the idea is you can have a couple of bad episodes, but then you have to get back on the track with great episodes. And I think if you look at Mad Men, it did that, but it also went seven seasons. That's two more than anybody else. Sopranos did like six and a half, depending, because it got kind of crazy at the end with how they broke it up. Yeah. And I love the Sopranos, and it would definitely be in there, but it would probably be more towards five. Because some of those episodes at the end were just like, what? Yeah. Where are you going? Yeah. that said, I do love the ending to that. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Okay. So we, what do we have? We have four of your top five?
you got one more.
Oh, I have one more.
Okay, let's see.
So you have The Wire, Mad Men, Breaking Bad, and
Sopranos.
Yeah.
And so I got a freebie,
huh? I would like to say that's to be determined, because maybe there's something that's great that's still out there.
The Platinum Age.
And the Platinum Age that will fit that thing. And maybe it's a comedy. Maybe you slide Arrested Development in there, even though it didn't do five seasons, or maybe you do 30 Rock or something like that. But right now I would say, I'll leave that one blank.
Okay. Do you have any like guilty pleasures?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You have time to watch guilty pleasure TV?
You know, I don't actually, but I still weave it in. I actually got to the point, it's funny, I never really watch TV that, I mean, I mostly watch everything, but a lot of British stuff, if it's not stuff that we're watching and it's just available, I just can't get to it. And so people are like, oh, Black Mirror is so amazing. Well, over Christmas, I finally had a chance to watch Black Mirror, and I loved it. Yeah. Loved it so much. So great. It's on Netflix. And then I started watching Peaky Blinders, which is another one that I love. But it's I'm really behind on Peaky Blinders, but I was like, okay, that I'll watch. But honestly, Jess, you have this thing where you can't do... Like, I feel like every hour that I spend watching TV has to be keeping up with all these spinning plates reviews I'm doing. But yeah, guilty pleasures are like I said, I had no institutional knowledge of TV because I didn't really watch it. But way back, like in college time, I loved ALF. So that's my guilty pleasure.
I'm a huge ALF fan.
That was an audible gasp.
I'm a huge ALF fan. I had a talking ALF as a kid. First times that I remember actually laughing really loudly at TV was an episode of ALF. I thought ALF was hilarious.
ALF lost me when he ate the cat. I couldn't.
Oh, yeah. As a cat lover, he did eat cats. That was the problem.
And I would like to say that this dovetails nicely with our next question. What shows would you like to see rebooted? ALF was my pick. We had someone else on a few weeks ago, and I said ALF. I wanted ALF rebooted.
Dark, gritty.
I wanted ALF. Yeah, make ALF an alcoholic this time, you guys.
He doesn't just eat cats. He eats people.
Okay, get at me. Get at me, Kevin Riley or someone.
Yeah. Now, I want to see the series that I want to see rebooted is Northern Exposure.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, good pick. Oh, yeah.
I love that show.
That's nice.
Just love that show. Okay. And John Corbett.
Yeah.
Who, by the way, that man can knock back some alcohol.
Oh, I bet. He's built by a mountain.
Oh, my God. He is a
like
big
a mountain.
Boy.
Right.
Yeah. Like, we don't have time to tell the story, but.
No, we have time. We have plenty of time.
Two TCAs ago. That whole body was leaning on me at the bar for a long time. Like, I'm making drink your wine. Bah. Like, you are a big dude. You're over two bills.
So, super nice though, right?
Super nice.
Yeah.
But I remember he's also just kind of like goofy and like he's, but my friend Sue, who was a huge Northern Exposure fan and loved him when he was the DJ, She said, as soon as I saw him on a talk show, I'm like, oh my God, it's the writers. You're not very bright. But the DJ, when he played a DJ who knew everything and he was philosophical and smart. Yeah. She was like, I was like, yeah, that was the writers.
He didn't ad lib that.
You know, another guilty pleasure is I like children's television.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My kids are.
What's your
go? You into Dora?
Can talk about that.
You into Dora?
No, Dora needs
go
to be
Diego,
murdered.
Go, Diego, go.
Yeah, no, Dora's awful. And goddamn Caillou. Can you swear on your podcast?
Yes.
Caillou needs to be strangled.
As many as you can.
You know,
Caillou deserves them all.
So much whining.
Yeah.
No, but it's like for
and
me.
And why is he four with no hair? Like, somebody needs
that?
To look into this.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Caillou obviously has
whining.
Like, worse.
No, I for me, like when I need to calm down and I need like what I call visual Xanax, I go to Maisie.
Amazing.
Oh, amazing.
Primary
sweet.
Colors, great yeah. soundtrack. This, oh, it's so awesome. And
cute
then,
little
animals. Yeah, and then if you want to have get, like, if you see too many people have their heads blown off or all these awful things that are on television.
On Maisie? I haven't seen that episode.
That's Jess's gritty reboot of Maisie.
Oh,
<Okay. laughs>
yeah.
She's not just a mouse, she's an assassin. So, yeah, that's it.
I was a big fan of Blue's Clues.
Me too. I loved Blue's Clues. And then what's his name ended up being?
Steve.
The mm-hmm. guy who played Steve, the original Steve, because then you got the face.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Steve
yeah.
left.
Yeah. The other fill-in dude was such a sham.
Joe or something.
Joe. Who
Fuck
cares about
guy.
Joe, your cousin?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Steve was on an episode of... Homicide: Life on the Street, where he played a high
no
school
prostitute?
Kid.
No,
he was a high school kid who killed the quarterback in the shower. I was like, Steve,
I'm gonna go home and watch this.
Blue's Clues. Love
well,
Blue's
after
Clues.
Those years with Blue, you got some pent up shit going on. I'm sure.
Your years with Blue.
Figure it out, Blue.
Yeah.
Were you annoyed that Blue wasn't figuring out the clues fast
I know.
Enough?
Do we always need to get to the third clue?
You're like, really? You can't.
Handy dandy
yeah.
notebook.
I know, right?
So you mentioned
side table drawer. Oh, I got you. Didn't think I had the knowledge, did you? I got the knowledge.
I sing that every time I hear the mailman come. That mail song pops into my head.
Mm-hmm.
I will not sing it on the air. I'll
I
sing
love
it after
that.
The show.
Okay, I want to hear that.
Okay, so we talked about your favorite shows. What specifically are some of your favorite moments on TV? You don't have to like love the show necessarily. And
why
also,
is it Peggy roller skating through the empty building?
It's obviously.
Oh, I
Peggy
love that. That's so good, right?
While Roger plays the Colette
yeah,
or whatever.
Those are some great. Those are really great moments. I love that. I love the end of The Sopranos. I think that's a great moment. I love the end of Mad Men. I love John Hamm sitting at that shot, that long shot of him
mm-hmm.
sitting on a bus bench.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But my favorite visual moment in the history of Mad Men is. And it's a one take. If you watch it, I think it was season two when he goes to Los Angeles. He's back in California, and he goes like basically it's a baptismal. He walks
mm-hmm.
into the Pacific Ocean.
Oh, yes.
And that's
yeah.
such a beautiful
yeah.
shot. And that was just like, oh,
yeah.
my God. But the I think one of my favorite moments, and I cry all the time. I'm an easy crier.
Really?
Oh.
Yeah, I'm kind of an awful person and mean, but I do, and I really have no feelings.
Maybe
yeah.
that's why I cry all the time, because I'm terrible.
I'm kind of dead inside, so no one wants to date me.
That's why
I'm
you
a terrible
co-signed on that, yeah.
yeah. I'm a very bad person to date, because I have no feelings. And I like lots of depressing anti-love songs.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a
I've
that's
often
a
said that if, like, iTunes made suicidal a genre, then I wouldn't have to make playlists anymore.
Isn't that so right?
Yeah.
It's just like, I'm like, should I not identify with all these songs, these breakup songs about yeah. being dead inside? That's bad. But no, so I do cry all the time. That's, like, my big secret I'm going to tell you guys.
Okay.
I cry at anything. But the one that, like, I can still watch it 20,000 times later, Andre Brower in Homicide: Life on the Street, there's an episode where he's really down on a cop commits suicide and he's like down on this whole thing. And he's not the whole episode is him like not feeling sympathetic to this event. But then because he committed suicide, the force doesn't give him an official funeral.
Oh, okay.
So they stage this funeral. And then, the closing shot is Andre Brower, you know, he's a mm-hmm. detective, but he mm-hmm. wears his dress blues. And he's out with the white gloves, and he's doing the,
mm-hmm.
the salute.
Yeah,
floods of tears at every time I see it.
Did you cry a lot of Friday Night Lights?
That is a crying show.
That is,
yeah,
man.
I cried during the first episode.
I dehydrated myself during Friday Night Lights.
When they're cutting Street's helmet off.
And then you see the cheerleaders. And then I feel like that has a lot of iconic visual moments, it does, too. Yeah. That show was really, really beautiful. Peter Berg is one of those guys for me. I'll watch anything he's involved in.
Yeah, and that's I couldn't watch Parenthood because it was too much tissue show. Too much.
Yeah,
crying.
I loved Parenthood.
That's what Leah likes about it.
Loved it. That's how I get all my feelings out during my shows, so I don't have to feel things in real life, Tim. That's the point.
I'm with you on that. I just didn't want to cry, so that was something. But yeah, Friday Night Lights, except for season two, right?
Oh, yeah.
It didn't exist.
But not even season two. It was just the murder. That was the only, come on. Right. That was an almost flawless show. I will not have anyone say anything bad about that show. And Kyle Chandler, the patron saint. Okay, what else was...
What TV trends or cliches are you just so tired of seeing?
Well, a lot of critics are tired of seeing the... cop, not a cop genre, which is she's a cop, but he's the devil. Or, it's the new one on Lucifer. The devil comes back to be like, help you solve crimes. Really? So everybody, if you think about it, I mean, we do this on my podcast too. Uh-huh. We were just doing this thing where all people were putting in there, what's your cop, not a cop. But if you look through the TV schedule, it's like 30 things. They somebody exist, is a cop, it's like, and then the other person is a novelist or a zombie or a psychic or the devil, and then they help them solve crime. So one of them, there's somebody who is not a cop and there's someone who is a cop. That's a tough trend.
Grantchester was one of those shows.
Priest and a cop. Priest and a cop. That sounds like a joke, but it's actually, that. And then I think I'm a little done with, although I like it, I'm a little done with the sort of like black hat anti-hero, if it's male. Mm-hmm. I would like to see, like, Jessica Jones was a great, like, you know, she was tougher and it was darker and drinker and that kind of thing, which would have been normally your male cable anti-hero. Mm-hmm. Tony Soprano, Don Draper and stuff like that. I'm kind of done with that, although that's kind of in my wheelhouse for that genre. But I'm kind of done with that.
Yeah.
Who is the best female character on TV at the moment? And who... what was the most surprising show of the last few years for you? You said that
it's two questions.
I know. I'm trying to jam them all in. We only have 8 minutes.
I know. I think Gina Rodriguez and is great in Jane the Virgin. Uh-huh. I think Jessica Jones is a great female character. That's a really good question. Like I said, you guys are good in the questions. What's the most surprising series?
Yeah. I feel like I was really surprised by Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce on Bravo. I was not expecting
Bravo's
that to
first
be good.
Scripted show.
Yeah.
I gave that a very good review.
Yeah, you did. And I really liked it. You mentioned earlier how you called it on Carnival.
Yeah.
Is that the review you're most proud of? Like, you're all, I was on the ground floor.
No, actually, the review that I was most proud of, and I only say this, it's because it's totally like tooting your own horn, but I only say this because it's like, it was said back to me and then historically has been told as true, is that when I was at the Chronicle, I wrote a story that basically helped save Arrested Development.
Oh, really?
So Mitch Hurwitz said it was your review.
Right.
He brought the review that I did into the meeting with Fox, with Gail Berman at Fox.
Wow.
And it was going to be like, everybody said, she's going to cancel you. And like, this is it. You will not get, I think it was either the second season or the third season. My review was like, why they should keep it. It's going to be the next Seinfeld. It'll be the next great, critically acclaimed. It doesn't have to be a huge hit, but this is the content is genius, and you need to save it. If you're a network, you're almost obligated to do this. And he went into the meeting and Gail Berman had the article and she said, did you see this? And he was like, slid his back in his pocket. No, what are you talking about?
What does it say?
And so so I heard from both of those two, and I had never met Mitch Hurwitz. And after, I guess, the session, he came up and he's like, oh my god, you saved the show.
Oh, well, thanks for that. Yeah,
so there's that. That's my one thing. And I'm actually in the series. There's a poster in there for the Dangerous Cousins. That's my quote.
Really?
Yeah, it says, Mitch came up with the quote, but he said, can I put your name on it? I'm like, oh yeah, no problem.
Hell yeah.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. You famously reversed your position on You're the Worst. You're the Worst. Mm-hmm. Are there any other shows that you didn't get to write, like that you were wrong about?
Well, one that I did, I don't know if I even did the initial review. I was definitely wrong on, but also we got the wrong pilot. I will say that. So kind of. But Curb Your Enthusiasm, I didn't kind of get the idea that the whole point was to make you cringe.
Yeah.
Right. And that the funny part was you were balled up on the couch, like physically repulsed by the television and uncomfortable by how awkward it was. And I didn't quite get that. I mean, they sent us the wrong pilot, but I was kind of wrong on that and went back. But on You're the Worst, I think it one of my things, which I said in that mm-hmm. review, was I think if you don't like it and you change your mind, you got to come out publicly and say it. You can't just say it on Twitter, you know, because that's not how I did my review. I did a huge splash review of it not being good. Yeah. So, yeah.
All right. Oh, crap. I just had another question that I forgot.
What was it like working at the Chronicle?
Yeah.
What's Michael Bauer like?
I barely knew Michael, really.
You didn't have to go to the office all the time.
No, I only went in twice a week.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And now I don't
know.
Shout out
to P-Fresh, by the way. I know that you guys were
cool mates. Uh-huh. Yes. Love Peter. Uh-huh. Still there. And I still have friends at the Chronicle. I worry about it, though. I'm sure you guys do, too. Oh, yeah. I worry about that it gets thinner every day, it seems like. So.
Yeah, it really does. We are, we get the paper Chronicle every day.
You do?
Yeah.
Whoa.
They make that
just for you.
Yeah, twice.
Yeah, I think it's delivered by Peter.
Twice. Twice I've picked up the Examiner, thinking that it was the Chronicle, because there's no content
anymore. I still have a lot of friends in print, and I worry about that, but
yeah.
We don't want to end on a downer now, do we?
No, we don't. Oh,
so we asked about your guilty pleasures, and you came back with BBC shows that people think they're smart for. What do you watch? Any reality shows? Are there any shows that you know are terrible, but you just can't quit?
Well, they're not. I like Survivor, and I'm Amazing Race. Okay. Those are the only ones I do. I don't really watch Survivor anymore, but I do Amazing Race. I hardly watch any scripted. Top Gear was my favorite.
Oh, really?
One,
oh.
Yeah. And I've said this story. I think I even said it maybe on my podcast too. Is that I love How It's Made, because it's the world's greatest hangover show. Because the narration never changes. It's flat, monotone.
Nice.
And it's then they do a marathon.
Yeah.
So you can watch 8 of them and have your head on the pillow. And they're going to be like, now we're going to talk about bicycle seats. Yes, this is factually fascinating.
So
mine go-to is The Joy of Painting for hangover.
Yeah. Oh, that's very good.
Bob Ross is good.
Very good, Bob Ross.
I like some HGTV in the background if I want to have TV on but not watch. Oh. And on that, I know that you are a big design guy. You were in Dwell, right?
Yeah.
So what's the best TV house? What's your favorite TV house?
What's the best TV house?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I'm the worst guest. I've all these great questions and I've let you down.
We're putting you on the spot.
I think the worst set, the best set is Mad Men, but actual house. Oh, the best recent house I would say is in Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce.
Yeah, nice. That is, I hate LA, but they make it look seriously covetable in that show.
Yeah. The house in Casual is beautiful.
Yeah.
The house in Casual is good. Yeah, there's some good LA houses.
I think we've established rich LA is our wheelhouse. Yeah. We like rich LA shows.
That's our favorite TV.
There's a lot of great modernism in LA that's been revamped.
The Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce house, that's a good one.
So
I've said that HGTV is on in the background. HGTV or Food Network, if you have to choose.
I think neither.
Sorry, that's my answer. Right.
Because I love eating food.
Don't like watching Guy Fieri.
No. And I don't like people making food. People are like, this is making. I'm like, that's just labor. Just finish it and then give it to me.
I can't get over the orgasmic noises they all have to make while they taste their own food.
Yes.
I actually find Food Network repulsive to watch.
Wow. I don't really have anything on in the background. Usually it's just constantly TV that I'm watching in the background.
Yeah.
Or music. I put music on in the background. That's what I do to calm me down.
Okay. So, we are almost out of time, so let's end with another song. Tim chose a great playlist that we did not play.
That's okay. It was fine. It was so fine.
But
I'll come back some other time.
Yeah, thank you so much. That's awesome. You're welcome anytime. Thanks so much for coming on. We are going to end with That's Entertainment by Paul Weller.
Song. Yay.
Car.